Are you looking for an environmentally safe organic fertilizer that will give you fantastic results in your garden this season? Neptune's Harvest manufactures a top-of-the-line, highly concentrated, cold-processed, hydrolyzed fish fertilizer. It's made from the 60 to 70% of the fish that's left over after the fillet has been removed to be sold as seafood.
All the fish are caught offshore in the cold, clean, dark, mineral-rich North Atlantic ocean water off the coast of New England. It contains all the nutrients that plants and soil need to stay healthy in nature's perfect balance. It will increase the soil quality, the yield and quality of all crops, making whatever you grow more nutrient-dense and better able to withstand stress, disease, and insect damage.
Neptune's Harvest is a great food source for microbes and beneficial bacteria, increasing the organic matter in the soil so that it drains better, retains moisture, and sequesters carbon. It's also a great deer repellent. To learn more about all their amazing organic fertilizers, go to neptunesharvest.com and use the code GOODDIRT for 5% off your order. That's GOODDIRT for 5% off your order.
Fast Forward Productions, The Women Are Speaking.
Our impact has been larger because we kind of grew into these other initiatives of focusing on plastics or fashion or cleanup, and it's kind of spread globally. But I think there is this need for like a mind shift change, like Earth Day every day. And I think we need to start thinking about those little choices we make each day and how they add up.
You're listening to the Good Dirt Podcast. This is a place where we dig into the nitty-gritty of sustainable living through food, fashion, and lifestyle.
And we're your hosts, Mary and Emma Kingsley, the mother and daughter founder team of Lady Farmer. We're sowing seeds of slow living through our community platform, events, and online marketplace.
We started this podcast as a means to share the wealth of information and quality conversations that we're having in our world as we dream up and deliver ways for each of us to live into the new paradigm, one that is regenerative, balanced, and whole.
We want to put the microphone in front of the voices that need to be heard the most right now, the farmers, the dreamers, the designers, and the doers.
So come cultivate a better world with us. We're so glad you're here. Now, let's dig in.
How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you.
It's finally, if you're on the East Coast, it has been really raining and really gross, but today is really sunny. So I'm not sure what it'll be exactly the day that you're listening to this, but I hope that spring is finding you.
What we call mud season here, I'm sure many of you out there understand what that means.
Yeah.
Also, we've got Earth Day coming up next week. On April 22nd. So this would be our Earth Day episode.
Yeah. We've also got a great episode in store for you next week as well. And in general, just April, May are super fun Lady Farmer Good Dirt months because it's just the energy right now. So we're really excited to bring you this special Earth Day episode from none other than Earth Day itself. The entity of Earth Day is what we are talking to today on our podcast. We were contacted by the organization. It is an organization. It's called earthday.org. It was a nonprofit started in the 70s around establishing this holiday and spreading this education around Earth Day. And we talked to the education coordinator at earthday.org, Emily Walker.
Earth Day was founded in 1970. The whole purpose was to raise awareness and demonstrate support for the environment by organizing activities and initiatives for individuals and communities and schools. I'm sure maybe some of you can reflect back on Earth Day during your school years. I remember when it started, I was in middle school. And when this whole discussion about protecting the environment began, which is really odd to think about since it's something that's so pervasive now, but believe it or not, for those of us that are of a certain age, there was sort of a time before it was really in our awareness, which is amazing to think about. I mean, yeah, my lifetime includes a campaign to try to get people to stop throwing litter outside of their car.
Yes. And the, I know you've told me about the Don't Be a Litter Bug
yeah.
campaign and how that was started. And now we still kind of say litter bug sometimes, but that was a very concerted effort to, you know, you guys apparently used to just throw trash on the street and be litter bugs. And then they had to have a marketing campaign to get people to throw trash in trash cans. That's what I heard.
Yeah. In my memory, that's what's true. I might have that wrong, but I don't remember personally just throwing trash on the ground. But I do remember the Don't Be a Litter Bug campaign. And the commercials would show people like throwing stuff outside of their car. I know people still do it from walking along these rural roads and so forth. And people think, oh, nobody lives out here. And so they just hoist their fast food bags outside the window, which is really terrible. But it used to be more prevalent, way more prevalent. I mean, I think there was a time when it didn't occur to people that this stuff lies around for years and years and we need to put it somewhere else. Now, of course, we sort of evolved the consciousness to we should not be having to throw so much away and put it in the landfill. We need to take that way further and stop disposing of things, like move to less disposability in our everyday life. So
it is interesting to think about Earth Day as a, through the years, as a marker of the evolution of our understanding of environmental issues and what we're doing about them. And I think that it's fitting that this year, the focus for the EarthDay.org efforts around Earth Day is to eliminate at least 60% of production of all plastics by 2040.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
Right. They have a theme, planet versus plastic. And here's a statement from the website. Planet versus plastics calls to advocate for widespread awareness on the health risk of plastics, rapidly phase out all single-use plastics, urgently push for a strong UN treaty on plastic pollution, and demand an end to fast fashion. They got fast fashion in there. Join us as we build a plastic-free planet for generations to come. That's from the EarthDay.org website. And yeah, we highly recommend going to the website, EarthDay.org. There's really great information there on the history of Earth Day and what has happened in the half century since it began, and just a wealth of up-to-date information, stories, and initiatives, and articles on these most pressing issues. And now celebrating 54 years, Earth Day can claim a remarkable legacy of environmental action, including legislation, education, and literacy.
So, as I mentioned, today we have Emily Walker. She's the education coordinator at EarthDay.org, and she plays a vital role in bolstering the growth and diversity of EarthDay.org's education partners. And she conducts in-depth research and assists with the development and continuation of curriculum, web resources, and supporting materials for Earth Day and other educational programs such as Green Schools, School Lunch Week, climate and environmental literacy, and more. And she keeps a close eye on federal, state, and local initiatives in the key policy areas that EarthDay.org is dedicated to. So she's doing a lot of important work, and she ensures that the organization remains informed and actively engaged in advocating for impactful educational policies. Emily was a delight to talk to, and we learned so much. We were so excited to hear that she's right here in the DC area, which makes sense. And we learned a lot of really exciting and encouraging things that Earth Day is up to these days, and we hope you enjoy.
So here's Emily Walker of EarthDay.org.
I'm an education coordinator for EarthDay.org. I specifically work with climate education. So I work with getting climate education integrated into the school system. We do policy. We also work with educators. So we're high up with the policy, but we're also down grassroots with working with youth and just educators and getting the perspectives on teaching climate education. I feel like right now there's a lot of conversations going on with climate change. I feel like we're bombarded by the media with it. So there's a big push to integrate it. EarthDay.org, we are global. So we do have contacts all over the world trying to integrate climate education, whether it's India, Italy, Africa, and the US. So I'm specifically working on the US, which is very complex because each state has its own set of rules and ways they like to do things. So So it's always a challenge, but I think all of us at EarthDay.org are ready to tackle it. I think that's kind of what, you know, binds us together.
That is super cool. I have to admit that I didn't know about EarthDay.org as an organization until we were setting up this interview. So can you talk a little bit more about the organization itself and how it came to be and sort of how it works?
And is EarthDay.org, is that the original organization that we all know as Earth Day? Is that the one?
Yeah, I love that question. We get it so often. People don't realize that we are the founders of the original Earth Day. So we're the nonprofit that came out of Earth Day. The original Earth Day in 1970, started by two guys. Dennis Hayes kind of took it over with the nonprofit side of things. But it started off as just really protest teach-ins, kind of just rallying the troops and just kind of making their voice loud about protecting the Earth. I think 1970s was really a big decade for kind of launching of a lot of different environmental movements. So we are the nonprofit that came out of it, and we kind of have lots of different initiatives. So I'm primarily with the climate education component of everything, but we do cleanups. We have an initiative on plastics, fashion. So we kind of work towards lots of different things, just being more sustainable in general. But each year we do have a theme. The theme of this year is planet versus plastics. So our big push this year is to just eliminate plastics. So we're really bringing attention in all initiatives around plastics. Our director, Aiden, for plastics, ending plastics, he has worked really hard. We have a report out. There's just so much information coming out about plastics. I'm sure you've heard about microplastics and everything. It's in our clothes, in our food, it's everywhere. So that we kind of have been kind of pushing that this year. But each year we do have like a theme.
We're really interested in how you ended up here and what in your background led you down this path.
So I think as far as coming to a place like Earth Day, very environmentally, sustainably friendly, working with people who are very like-minded in that way of, you know, protecting the Earth. I grew up in like rural Virginia. So growing up, we were very sustainable. We had compost, we had gardens, everything was very earth-minded. I think everything we did, and that kind of really set me up with a certain mindset, I think, growing up. You know, we bought clothes to last, just a different mindset. And then growing up, I just loved learning. I loved being around different environments. I liked learning. I liked talking to people. So I think that kind of set me up to my first career as an educator. So I worked as an elementary school teacher with kindergarten and first grade for 6 years. So I was a school teacher, and I loved working with kids at that age because they had that sense of wonder. They still wanted to ask questions and explore, and I just loved it. And I loved when we got to do activities that were hands-on, that were nature-based. We got to go outside on like a nature walk. I just saw the kids light up, and there was such a, I think, disconnect from their lives, being inside most of the day, playing on their computer, just, I think their everyday didn't really involve the earth and nature. It was like two separate things. It's like you think of Earth Day, it's like this separate entity. And it's so interesting when we would bring these things that they see, but they don't really interact with. And I was an educator, and I decided to leave education. I always knew I wanted to do more. I wanted to have a bigger impact. I love the immediate impact of teaching, but I knew I wanted to work towards a bigger cause. And that kind of really set into motion my job at Earth Day.
I would think Earth Day would be mostly about education because, you know, we're all walking around out here doing our thing, living our lives, buying the products. And yeah, here comes Earth Day in April. And it's this really nice one day when we all try to think about the earth and be nice to the earth. But, you know, by now, I hope we all realize that that's not going to cut it. We all need education in big ways about, you know, what we're faced with. And how would you say that Earth Day as an entity has evolved and like the cultural awareness of it and the cultural attention to it?
I think, you know, since 1970, it really started as teach-in. So they would go in to a school, you would have a teachers teach about Earth Day on that one day. But I think kind of transforming over the years, you think about Earth Day, but I think our impact has been larger because we kind of grew into these other initiatives of focusing on plastics or fashion or cleanup. And it's kind of spread globally. So I think our name is widely recognized. And I think that has value and it makes us important because we're able to go back to the start of Earth Day. But I think there is this need for like a mind shift change, like Earth Day every day. And I think we need to start thinking about those little choices we make each day and how they add up. Just like if you use a plastic water bottle every day, how much plastic is there at the end of the year? If you looked at all the plastic water bottles you use, like that's huge. But by switching to a reusable water bottle, there's that little change, that one purchase you make. So I think it's about a mind shift change, really. And I think that's kind of where we are with Earth Day. I will say Kathleen Rogers, our president who took over Earth Day, she has been one of the biggest people to push climate education.
That all makes sense. Would you say that the work at Earth Day, I know you're in the education sector, I know it's a huge multinational organization, but is it primarily education or maybe marketing or is it policy or do you work in all of those things as an organization?
You know what? As an educator, we always say we wear many hats. You know, we're like a parent, but we're also like a teacher. We like, you know, we're also, we do so many different things.
A theater performer.
Yeah, exactly. We like do so many different things all at once. I think it's the same way at this organization. We all wear different hats at different times. So I think it's such a group effort and it's so all levels, whether it's up here with policy or it's down on the ground talking with individuals and communities or at schools. And I think that just makes it so much better when you have all of these different perspectives working towards a common goal, which is creating awareness and getting people to protect the planet. We need drastic change.
So what are some of the current initiatives that you're working on? We're recording this late winter, early spring to be soon, and this will come out around Earth Day, which is exciting. So can you tell us about some of the initiatives that you're working on now and what that looks like and then any like exciting plans for Earth Day 2024?
We're currently working with Take Action Global Tag. So we are partnering with them and we are doing a Coding for Climate. So Coding for Climate is where you are presented with a problem with the earth. You can use coding. So that could look like Minecraft or like actually just building with like Lego, something like that. So building to solve the problem, to come up with a solution and then have students present it. So it's very youth focused problem solving, but it's utilizing skills that they need. I think a big push is for skills that will allow students to use further down the road. So to show that we do need these like green skills, these skills to help whatever career they have, because we say every job is going to be a green job. So I think the really cool thing about this project that will be up until Earth Day and then we'll have like a celebration with the students is that they get to present and they get to take ownership. They have like this agency over what they're doing and it's meaningful. And I think choice is a big thing for kids to see the relevancy and to be able to choose and to feel like they are making a difference.
Could you give an example of that coding for climate, like what that might look like?
Yeah. So let's say there's a problem around sea levels are rising on the coast and it will destroy really important parts of the town, like homes. They might come up with a solution to build like a wall or something to help preserve the natural environment of that area. So it's utilizing skills because coding and technology is very big right now in schools because it is everywhere. They need those foundational skills. So it's utilizing skills, but they do get a choice. They don't have to do it coding like on the computer. It can be coding in a different way, like using Legos. So they have to build it. It could be drawing. It could be really any way to solve the problem, but it's choice. They do that and they have to be able to explain how the solution works, why it works. But the biggest thing is there's like a celebration at the end. So they get to share out their solution to a wider audience. I think that's really important is to be able to have them share and like their voice kind of amplified. So I think it's our job to kind of be able to spotlight that. I think up to us to amplify their voices. And that's definitely the teacher in me coming out because kids are amazing and they deserve, you know, to feel heard and seen. So we're working with TAG on that, Take Action Global. Some other things we're working on, we're actually working with getting rid of plastics in the cafeteria. So ending plastics in the cafeteria initiative. I'm really excited because we're working with a local county on a long-term plan because these things aren't, you know, changed overnight. But we're working with a local county to get some schools to kind of start the conversation. So we're planning it out what it would look like. So it might start with reducing plastics in the cafeteria and seeing the different ways that they can slowly make changes. So really it comes back to production of plastics and how we're getting food into schools.
That's a huge system and whole industry that's just like in place and is like a machine working. So yeah, it's a big interruption.
Yeah, we were concerned about that in the 90s when my kids were in school and they started using styrofoam trays. You know, where is plastic showing up in the lunchroom?
That's such a good question. I was actually talking with a group of high school students who were interested in getting the conversation started at their school. So they wanted to start the conversation of how do we get rid of plastics here? And students were from different schools, but the resources they had were so vastly different. Some schools had still metal silverware. Others just had, you know, plastic wrap that's like the trio of utensils with a napkin, you know, easy, but it's like such a waste. And they were in the same county, so under the same umbrella school district, but it was so different, resource accessibility. And it brings questions of like equity. So this is, would be harder for a school in a more rural area with resources that, you know, are harder, trickier to kind of challenge where they're getting their resources from, like food, packaged foods. But there's a great example in New York. There are schools actually that have done this. They've already gotten rid of plastic in their cafeteria. Cafeteria culture has already kind of done this, but the thing is, students started it. So they were fifth grade students who started this whole movement in New York. So it can be done, but they do need support. You know, we just can't say, okay, go off and try to end plastic and get rid of it, see what happens. They need support. They need support from their community, parents, educators, the school, especially if it is starting in the school, and organizations like us, like, are there to support and connect resources. We're very much a connector organization. We really, because we are a nonprofit, but we're there to connect and see how we can really support others with more sustainable choices. So I'm really excited about this initiative, especially since it goes with our theme for the year.
A couple of things. One was back in the 90s when I was working with the green school in the elementary school. We had plastic or a waste-free lunch day for kids to bring their stuff from home. And even back then, and there's way more plastic now and way more, really way more convenience foods and stuff even than there was then. It took a tremendous amount of coaching and support and communication to help the parents know, like, what do you do? How do you do that? How do you do a waste-free packed lunch? You know, there was like kind of no sensibility for it. So, you know, this is something that's really been a problem for a while. That goes back to, you know, Emma's generation.
I was reading your bio as Green School. Is that a program of earthday.org?
That was like a past initiative, Green Schools, but there's different variations. It's just a way for a school to kind of change their infrastructure and making sustainable choices.
Mom, what you were doing was like part of a bigger program called Green School, or if you just like made it up, I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's just what we called it because it's kind of an obvious name, or if we were hooked into some bigger program. I really don't know. I don't know. Has it been around since the 90s? Do you know of, Emily?
I feel like they have. I feel like there's been green schools. We weren't a green school, but like we were like certified with like a level of being a green school when I was in elementary school. I also remember like in school, like my lunch, when I would pack from home, everything came in little bags, like little bags of like Oreos or, you know, your sandwich pack. Everything was plastic wrapped. That's how you preserved everything.
It was seen as more sanitary and
easier.
Convenient.
Yeah, it is easier.
Yeah.
Easier and therefore necessary. That gets us into the topic for the year, of course, is to, I think you said earlier, to eliminate plastic. Is that what you said? That's the theme of the year. So talk about that a little bit. That's pretty ambitious. What is that looking like for your theme for the year?
Yeah. So when you say eliminate plastic, I know it sounds like very intense and sounds like this like unattainable thing, but we all want it. We all know like we need to get rid of it. So we're really spotlighting the health implications of plastic. Plastic is everywhere. Plastic is in our bodies. It's affecting our thinking. It's affecting the way our systems and our body are working, how effective they are. There's a lot of research being done currently. There's not a ton of research out there quite yet. But what we have found is like you have a credit card's worth of microplastics in your brain. If you combine all the plastics just floating, all the microplastics, even though we can't see it, it's there. And I think a lot of times if we don't see something, it's not a problem. I think that goes back to the mind shift change with plastic because it is convenient. You don't think about it. It's, you know, easy to access and we can throw it away or recycle it and it's just out of sight, out of mind. So I think we're really trying to bring awareness to, even though it is out of sight, it's still in our bodies and it's still affecting us in ways we don't know yet. The research has not been done. We don't know the extent on our bodies, but we know it is affecting children as well. We came out with a babies versus plastics report, which has a ton of just like terrifying information. Our goal is to get people to like just kind of stop and think. I think sometimes you do have to shock them with information. But overall, I think we're just trying to show the impacts of plastic and why we shouldn't be using it. And I know it's harder now because especially after COVID, I feel like the increase in plastics, things that are like more sanitary, I think makes things very difficult because things wrapped in plastic, whether, you know, it makes things more sanitary in our mind. And individually wrapped fruits. I went into the grocery store the other day and there was an orange. They have oranges now that are like pre-peeled and like packaged in plastic.
Oh my goodness. Nature gave that plant.
I know. Nature's natural wrapping was taken off to place it with human-made wrapping. If that's not like the problem right there, I don't know what is.
So I want to, just circling back to the baby article a minute, I thought, first of all, your website, earthday.org, has a lot of really great articles. So I highly recommend you listeners go in there and look around. And there's some really in-depth articles with tons of resources, tons of research. Very, very informative website that takes you way beyond just, like we said, you know, celebrating the day and all of that. But baby versus plastic, was that the name of the article?
Yes, babies versus plastic.
So it brought out the fact that, and I want new parents to really know this, like, you know, babies put things in their mouth. And so many of our baby supplies and products and clothing and all of that are made with plastics and microplastics and things with chemicals that are not, that, you know, like you said, we don't know the effects of these things yet. And a baby might put the corner of his little shirt in its mouth and suck on it because that's what babies do because they're teething or whatever. They're getting microplastics. They're getting chemicals from the dyes. They're getting all kinds of things that, when, again, we don't even know what the effects are. So, you know, on here, we talk about sustainable clothing on here a lot. And, you know, we talk about its impact on the environment a lot. But I really appreciate your organization's spotlight on the health effects. I think that's something we haven't talked about enough. And I think that's something that's going to get people's attention, especially where their babies are concerned. Like, if your baby is sucking on that plastic teething ring or whatever it is, yes, there might be something in there that you don't want going to the baby's brain or their organs. Or
it's taken that, you know, to show like the vulnerability of our children to kind of get people to stop and think. And I think that goes to a good point of like what alternatives there also are out there. There's some, but there needs to be more. I think the more research that comes out, I think the more alternatives there will be, but there has to be a demand for it. We can shift the conversation, but there has to be the demand for it. I think it's really just about getting the information out there. I think that's, at the end of the day, we just want people to know.
Yeah, and it's not to, you know, it's not to be doom and gloom or scare people or whatever, but you're faced with a choice, you know, which product to buy, you know, this plastic thing versus something that's made out of a, you know, a natural material or something that is known and proven to be non-toxic. And you say, well, I'm not going to do that because it costs a little bit more. It'll cost 20 or 30% more to buy the thing that's supposedly better. And I don't think we're quite to the point in our collective thinking where there's that much difference that they may need to take the more expensive option. But with initiatives like yours to really tell people what the facts are, what the studies are, maybe people will start making those choices because of the growing evidence that these things are harmful.
It's also an interesting question about why is the better option more expensive? It's because the more harmful option has the system working in its favor because it's cheap to make and it's this byproduct of oil. It's all business. And we see the same thing in the food system where it's so weird that like a carrot you can literally plant with a seed and then pull out of the ground locally is like far more expensive than a carrot that's been like shrink wrapped in plastic and like shipped around the world. It's just so crazy. So I just want to put a shout out. I mean, we don't have any answers to that here in this moment, but just kind of thinking about it that way from a zoomed out, like, why are we even here? And it's these huge systems that have been built around this.
If you're planting flowers, vegetables, shrubs, or just trying to keep your lawn healthy and green, then you should know about Neptune's Harvest. Neptune's Harvest fertilizers come from the mineral-rich North Atlantic Ocean, which contains all the nutrients that plants and soil need.
Flower growers, get your sunglasses out. You'll want to use them when you're looking at how bright those colors are. Vegetable growers, with Neptune's Harvest, you can achieve the amazing results you deserve for all your efforts with the most abundant, sweet-tasting supply of organically grown produce. And you know, there's nothing like the taste of a fresh garden tomato you grew yourself. Neptune's Harvest works great, whether you know what you're doing or not. You'll look good, and you'll feel good, because you're doing the right thing for the environment and your health.
Try Neptune's Harvest, products from the ocean to set your plants in motion. Available at neptunesharvest.com. Use the code GOODDIRT at checkout for 5% off your order. That's G-O-O-D-D-I-R-T.
I'm still stuck on the cafeteria plastics thing because I think that's so major. And speaking of systems, getting in through the institutions is an interesting way to think about it because that's such a big part of our system. So many people are fed every day by schools and institutions and hospitals and, you know, university, not even just school cafeteria, but universities and office building, you know, everything. So I know it differs based on the school and the county and the people behind it. What would you say in general, like for someone who's listening and is like, I want to get this going in my cafeteria. Where do you start with that? And what do you think is like kind of the easiest entry point? Would it be, let's stop providing plastic utensils so people have to bring their own? Or is it something that's more like, do you go straight to the food service provider?
Yeah, no, I think that I've actually had that question before. And I love this question because there is no one answer. I think it requires all of those things. I think a great way to start, if I was talking to a teacher or a student who has this idea and it's overwhelming, it's like, where do I start? I would say pick a day. So it could be Earth Day. I mean, that's one of the best, I think, days to start something like this. I think November 8th is Plastic Free Lunch Day, but it can be really any day. It can be a random day in February and just pick a day and you create a campaign around it. You know, you can make posters, you go to your principal, you go to the people in charge at your school to maybe start with by saying Plastic Free Lunch Day. Start small. Everyone, you know, maybe bring things from home, or I know that's not always the easiest way is for people to bring, sometimes they don't have access to food at home. And there are equity issues in this, all intertwined. But I think you do your part. So let's say if you do buy lunch, maybe you don't pick up all three, spoon, fork, knife. Maybe just pick up one. Or maybe you decide to not pick up that cookie that's wrapped in plastic that day. One little thing that's not wrapped in plastic or made of plastic.
So you start with the consumer, you would say.
Yeah. You know, that's such a complicated question because I know a lot of times everything is pushed onto consumers, like it's your choice. And consumers do kind of start the conversation. But I do think you need to go beyond that. I don't think it's up to all the students to make that choice. A lot of that is out of their control, right? Where they get their food from home, whether, you know, their mom goes to the grocery store, or dad goes to the grocery store, aunt, whoever's watching them, like who buys the food for their household, or where the school cafeteria gets their food. I think it then becomes more who's the principal, who's the school board. So you start advocating, you start doing more. So it's more action oriented. But I do think the conversation starts in the school and then you take it to who's in charge.
Yeah. See, I would just go straight to the, I would be like, Cisco, let's talk. But I don't know. I just don't know how it works.
Yeah. And also there, it seems like some of those things, you know, for instance, you pick one utensil instead of three. That's something where I think you could skip over the individual choice part and just
there's
say,
no plastic utensils out. I don't
know, like, what? Or here, if you must use plastic utensils, you can use one.
Yeah, and like you have to here's ask your over here instead of like it being out there. Make it a little harder.
Yeah. So this issue of it being on the consumer to do their part and to make the right choice. I know y'all have a section. There's a lot of cleanup initiatives, and you have this big nice map where you can go in and see where the local beach cleanup or park initiatives are in your area. And I looked around to see if there was one near us and all that. So it brings to mind the question, we can clean up all day long. We can clean up the beaches all day long. But as long as at the top of the funnel, they're still making all this stuff. There's not enough beach cleanups to clean it all up because it keeps coming. And I'm sure you're familiar with the organization, The Story of Stuff. And they have that wonderful graphic where the tap is on and the tub is overflowing and people are scrambling around trying to clean up the water. And they say, this is not helping. We need to turn off the tap. So what is y'all's position on this? Like, there's a lot of marketing, a lot of resources, a lot of attention put on, let's be good citizens and go to pick the plastic up off the beach. Could those same efforts be directed towards really going to the top and saying, stop it, stop it. We don't want this stuff made anymore.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid question. I think a lot of times consumers feel overwhelmed by being asked to do these things that, you know, are already here. And it's like, we can't change all of this. And yeah, I think cleanups are a good place to start. I think it gets people's minds changing. I think it gets them thinking. But yes, I agree that action is needed. I think you need to go towards policymakers, people making the decisions and protesting, rallying groups, making your voice loud. I think that is where change does happen, is at the policy level, and it's usually way up here. And how Earth Day really works is that we do a lot of policy work. We do a lot of action oriented, write a letter to your school board, write a letter to your state senator or state superintendent, whoever's in charge of whatever you're trying to work on. We have templates to write letters to, kind of whoever you need to write to if you want something changed. But you also have the kind of like grassroots on the ground, and it's okay to be angry. It's okay to, you know, write a letter.
The more people are thinking for themselves, like, oh, this needs to be solved from the top, maybe that helps contribute to.
Yeah. And it's also a very valuable community building thing for sure. And for people to physically see and be immersed in the enormity of the issue, I do think ignites action. So yes, they're certainly very, very valuable. But what I would like our listeners to hear is that there are a lot of forces out there that want you to think as a consumer that you can solve this by recycling. Like, okay, you can recycle all of those plastic water bottles and it's no problem. Yeah, it's still a problem.
It's a big lie. This stuff is not recycled. Most of it is not recycled.
You know, we have to get beyond recycling. I think that's really where we are. A lot of the things that are recycled end up in the trash. It usually ends up in a different country, ends up in a country that has less resources, doesn't have the power that, you know, a country like the US does. So we usually ship it to somewhere else where we don't see it. And I think that goes back to you don't see it, it's not there. And I think we need to, you know, kind of take down that wall. We need more transparency. That's so important. I think right now, I think things are coming out. I think there's more spotlights on these issues, but they're still so censored. I think there's still so much more to be exposed. We need to see the truth. You know, we're always on the latest craze, latest thing. When we see something pop up, like, you know, oh, it's recycled, it's something new, like, let's try it out. Sometimes I think we forget to stop and think, or really slow down. I think we need to slow down, think about things. The research is not out there. I think we do need to really start thinking towards now, but the future. Yeah, like the impacts, even though we're not going to see it in our lifetime, what about our children? I think, I don't know. I think we kind of stopped thinking ahead and just slowing down. And I think we're getting to a point where we're going to be forced to. And I think that's really unfortunate. I think we have people who are starting to get that mind shift change, but the general public aren't. People either, like, you know, think recycling is the end all, like it's the best thing ever, or recycling is not the way to look at things. You have to go to the producers. You have to just end plastic. You just have to get rid of it. It just needs to be eliminated.
It's all very, very layered and nuanced. And, you know, you have everything from no sensibility to it at all, just outright mindless consumerism that I think starts with the need, you know, for convenience. And that's not a criticism of people. I mean, I know people have all kinds of circumstances in their lives where convenience is key. But when we start thinking through what are the consequences of convenience and how convenient is that really in your personal life, when you start to break it down and how good and how beneficial, and just getting people to unwind that a little bit and see what they get for their own lives. And it trips people up. It trips people up. You know, you go in the store and it'll, you know, that's the tag will say earth friendly or this is a green product.
Yeah. There's these buzzwords that are just thrown on clothing that people just take at face value a lot of times. I think we kind of forgot to stop and think for ourselves. We assume everyone is just correct when it comes to when we're buying things.
Yeah. I'm really curious about what Earth Day's efforts and work looks like in other countries versus here and like how it's different.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think so. We do meet with our, I guess, consultants in other countries a lot because every country is so different. So as far as policy goes, there's such a different way of doing things in other countries. Europe is usually way ahead of us with sustainable policies and the work they're doing. India, you know, their population is so huge and there's, I think it's very multifaceted. I think things are just so different in every country, but I think it goes back to policies. I think every goal is the policies in every country, like the goal is to create policy that is more sustainable, that provides climate education. I think that's like the unifying kind of goal for all of us, but we're all kind of working on different things at different paces because it's so hard because there's different layers, especially in the US. But I think the thing that really ties us together is climate education, actually, is getting the conversation around climate change. I think that just really unifies all of us, even though we're all working on different things.
I just think it would be so interesting, like you mentioned, Europe is so far ahead of us. And then there's other places where the resources are just so different. People, dear Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you don't have the resources to get your hierarchy of needs every day, no, you're not worried about recycling. You guys are just so big and widespread that it would be really interesting to kind of like, you know, have a similar conversation with someone who's working in Africa or, you know, elsewhere. Maybe you're able to do more in areas where there is quote unquote less because there might be less obstacles and people can just do things. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are all, those are all valid. I feel like, yeah, it's so different.
I really liked what you were saying about, you mentioned a few minutes ago, slowing down and thinking about where things are coming from and what we need. And so on The Good Dirt and at Lady Farmer, we talk a lot about slow living as kind of a way to approach all of these issues. So we are curious, what does slow living mean to you? And if you feel like you are able to incorporate slow living into your life?
I love that question. Slow living is really just slowing your mind down to think things through, enjoying smaller things. Actually, the word I have for this year is joy. So it requires me to slow down and enjoy the smaller moments. So finding little joys throughout my day. And that was something that I challenged myself to do this year. And I think that really speaks to slow living and slowing down and finding those small, joyful things. Cooking dinner, going to the grocery store. I think little things that you can make something that you're proud of and feel good about. And for me, especially, I'm like going to the market. I think I little things that are just good for me, good for the planet. I think that just brings me such joy. And I think I'm trying to do more of that. Think things through more and do things that bring me joy. So that's what comes to mind when I think of slow living.
Thank you so much. And it's very pertinent to this, the conversation about slowing down enough to figure out what makes sense. Because a lot of these behaviors just really don't make any sense, but we don't slow down enough to think about them. So what does The Good Dirt mean to you?
Well, the term good dirt, I think of healthy, right? Like good dirt, like healthy dirt has all the vitamins and nutrients it needs to sustain life. And I really think of like the planet right now. There's so many pollutants and things that are just not creating good dirt. Like we have really contaminated the dirt. It requires us to think about what we're doing to the planet that we live in and how we're consuming the things that the planet's giving us. I think we really have to like heal our relationship with the planet. I think it requires a mind shift change and we have to think about the planet in a different way because it provides so much for us. We are a part of it. And I think there's such a separation from us and the planet. Like we don't see the relationship that we have. I think we have to heal it to really create change.
Definitely. Before we close out, is there anything else that you want to leave with the listeners or that you want folks to take away from the conversation about Earth Day or your work?
Yeah, I think when we think of Earth Day, we think of the one day. And I think that's a great place to start. But I think our organization really values action and continuous mind shift change. that's how we're going to create change. And yeah, we have lots of different initiatives on our website. So whatever interests you, wherever you find your passion and you feel like that's inspiring your action, go for it. I think that's kind of a big thing too. I think you have to find what kind of fires you up. So if it's fashion, if it's plastics, if it's education, I think you have to find what you're passionate about.
So for anyone listening to this, go to earthday.org and just look around.
And since you are the education person, what if someone is listening and they want to get something going in their school and maybe they don't have an established relationship with Earth Day or they're looking for that support? What do they do?
I love that. We have education@earthday.org email. If they have questions, I will respond. We have a climate education page on our website that's really easy to access. We redesigned it with teachers in mind, so it's easy to navigate whether they want something for their classroom, latest climate education information, or if they just want to learn how to activate themselves or their students. It's on that page. It's educate and advocate. So we always say educate to advocate. So you start with educating yourselves and then you inspire action. So advocating for a cause. Everything is on there. It's a great starting point. We have new resources, articles, newsletters that come out every month to keep. We also have an Instagram at Earth Day Educators. We have a great group of organizations and other teacher groups on there. So we just kind of like to keep everyone informed. I think we need information that is inspiring and not always kind of like the doom and gloom. I think we really think of optimism and hope and bringing people together with some, what was with such a heavy topic as, you know, the planet.
I have one more question. Do you have a story or an example or an illustration or something that you've observed that really gives you hope for the way things are headed?
I do. I actually recently spoke with a group of advocates, student advocates, they're high schoolers in Chicago. They're part of It's Our Future. And these students had so many brilliant questions and they're already doing things to create change in their community. They've already inspired action within their county and their state. And it's just amazing to see. It's because it's all student led. It's their voices and they're very passionate. I think sometimes we don't give the youth enough credit because they're on fire. They want change. They want people to listen. I think they're the real voices. So I think it's really up to us to really give them that platform so we can help amplify their voices. And it was just amazing. They had such great questions. Some of them were way beyond anything that I could think of and even ever accomplish. So I think that was just really inspiring. I got goosebumps talking to a few of them. It's like, you could just tell how passionate they were and the thinking they're doing is just, I haven't seen it before. And it was just amazing. Like, it made my day.
That's so great because in 10 or 15 years, they're going to be the ones making policy. So that's very, very hopeful that those young minds are already working on this. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time today. It was a really fun and informative and enlightening conversation. And I'd love to circle back to you in a bit and see how things are going.
I would love that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in, calling in, and spreading the good dirt. We love hearing from you. You can reach our listener voicemail at 443-459-1950. That's 443-459-1950. You can find this number in our show notes and in our Instagram profile.
This show is produced by Lady Farmer, a slow living lifestyle community, and the original music is composed and performed by John Kingsley.
For more from Lady Farmer, follow us on Instagram at We Are Lady Farmer. That's We Are Lady Farmer. Or join us online at www.ladyfarmer.com. We'll see you next time on The Good Dirt.
Goodbye.